Warning, this episode may contain graphic and triggering content. Listener discretion is advised. Hello and welcome back to Amy Talks. I'm your host Amy, and today we have a very special and sensitive episode as we will be speaking with a victim of familial sex trafficking. Kelly McKenzie has bravely agreed to share her story with me in the hopes of spreading awareness and giving hope to those who may be going through similar experiences. But most importantly, I hope that through this interview, that her strength and resilience will inspire others to break free from the rule of abuse. The good news story I've got for you today is so cute. So it's a video from Facebook and it's titled Baby Grows Up in Assisted Living. So basically there's like an assisted living home, I guess in the US, where there was an employee called Rainey, and obviously a lot of people don't have access to childcare or can't afford it. So she brought her daughter Charlie into work one day, and the residents absolutely dote on her. Like, they show her the TV and let them try on their glasses and things like that. Like, it's so cute. And they have lots of cuddles and there's lots of precious little moments in the video. I really enjoyed watching it and it brought a smile to my face. And I hope it does yours too. I will put the link in the show notes for you so you can go and view it for yourself, and hopefully it will brighten your day. So I'm here with Kelly. Hello.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. For those who maybe don't know, could you maybe recap a little bit of your kind of story?
I was trafficked by my parents for 26 years, escaped. And after my escape, I was then groomed and kidnapped by a man that was actually connected to them still. Mm-hmm. I've been gone 13 years. Mm-hmm. This past September, and just basically been sharing my story on my podcast and on social media, trying to get awareness out of what the truth of sex trafficking looks like so people can spot it easier, spot victims, keep themselves safe, and keep other people in their area safe as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In what ways were you trafficked, if you're willing to tell me? You don't have to.
I think the easiest way to say it without going into too much graphic detail is, mm-hmm, I was essentially forced into being a prostitute. So I was sold for sex and different things. And it started at a very, very young age. My best guess is about 2 or 3, but honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if it was younger than that.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, for people who haven't been through it, it's kind of a bit of a difficult topic to get your head around. Like, why would somebody in a family traffic their own child or their own, you know, sister? Or could you maybe shed some light on that?
You know, I think money is the biggest driving force. It's I don't quite know the statistics other than here in America, and I mean, it's a multi-billion-dollar a year industry. So I really think that is one of the driving forces. My story is common yet unique in a way, because most of the trafficking that happens and when it comes to families is, you know, the parent is a drug addict and sells their kids, you know, for just a few dollars to get, you know, a fix for their drugs and things like that.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of different things. Mm. You know, but I really think money is the main driving force in that, and the power and control. Like, I know for my parents, they really like power and really like controlling every single person. So,
So how did you find the strength to leave that situation? Because I can imagine that was quite hard.
You know, it was like, I just realized one day, like, it felt like everything just kind of crashed down. And I realized how unsafe I was, and I had two children that I was living with my parents, and it was like It's just like my eyes opened, and it was on a Wednesday night. I called a domestic violence shelter, told them things that were going on, and I was gone the next day. I didn't know at that time that it was called sex trafficking. I just thought it was domestic violence and that they were allowing, like the way I worded it was they allowed their friends to do things to me. But later in life, after like starting to heal and going through that whole process is when I actually did find out that it was sex trafficking. And that actually was just 6 years ago that I figured that out.
Oh, wow. As you were going through it and kind of since, what has been the impact on you and your life? Because I can imagine it's been significant.
I'm scared a lot. Since I escaped, it's not like, the fear that I'm sure some people get, like when they see like a spider or something where you scream and run away. It's just like constantly looking over my shoulder, constantly changing my location, changing my name, changing things to help keep myself safe, and just always being aware of everything. But I also have a very dark sense of humor, which I'm finding out when I meet new people is not so normal all the time. But when you face things that are worse than death, you kind of find humor in the weirdest things.
I can imagine. Like when you were younger, did you have kind of friends and kind of other families around you that kind of were the same, or were they kind of different and you sort of saw the differences between, maybe how your friends' families acted and yours, or was there any differences?
It was actually a mixture of both. I was brought to parties that had other kids that were being trafficked, and
Oh gosh.
it was like a showcase type of thing in the ring. So like if a child had like brown hair and green eyes and that's what a client want, they could kind of network a little bit. But it was like at these parties, I think 8 was the youngest age, and they continued on through my early teenage years. We never talked about it being wrong. We never talked about anything. So my friends from school that never talked about it either, I just assumed that it happened to them too. Like that's how normal it was for me. So the friends that weren't a part of it and it wasn't happening to, I never suspected that it wasn't normal. And any time that I had like reached out to, a quote unquote trusted adult, they would believe whatever lies my parents spewed to make up an excuse on why I was talking the way that I was. And as a child, I processed that as, well, if what was happening was really wrong and bad, somebody would do something. So I wasn't processing it as, well, they're believing them over me. As the child, I was like, well, if my parent they're my parents, if what they're doing is wrong, then somebody's gonna step in, the police or someone, and since nobody did, it just helped to normalize what was happening to me and just further the psychological abuse that I was going under. I don't think that's the right way to say that, but you get what I mean.
I know what you mean. You mentioned something interesting there about, you thought that somebody would do something, and it kind of took your it took your own sort of impetus to do something yourself.
So
What
the
do you
very
think is the kind of main driver of that? Do you think that people maybe don't want to intrude or things like that?
I hear the phrase from my family a lot. I don't want to get involved. Like those are the words I hate most in my life. And I think there is a certain part of that when it comes to like a stranger witnessing something, they just want to kind of distance themselves. But my parents had died. I hate saying it this way because it sounds like so mobbish, but they had psychiatrists on their payroll that worked with the ring, and they were able to do some much housing by proxy and get me diagnosed with a lot of psychological, like mental health disorders that included delusions and things like that. So it's like they lied about me and said that I was talking about that because I was delusional and I was having a an episode, And then they had a doctor to back up everything that they said. So I'm sure that played a huge part in why people didn't pay attention as like that I actually spoke to. But I talked with a girl, well, she's not a little girl anymore, but she was when I babysat her. And she said like her parents thought something was going on, but they thought it was abuse. And they confronted my mother, not knowing that she was involved, thinking, you know, it's the mother, they're sweet, innocent, you know, they'll protect their daughters. And she would just, she's like, oh, she just is an attention seeker, you know. So, I mean, it's a mixture of a lot of things. I think some people don't want to get involved, and other people don't quite understand what is happening. So when they do get involved, they don't, I mean, I hate saying like they don't get involved in the right way, but it's they don't know where to properly report it to. And if so, I think it's like a whole number of things, but I think education and factual awareness about sex trafficking could really change that for people. And that's why I share my story as publicly as I do, hoping it'll get people to really understand what it is. So if it's if they notice something in one of their neighbor's children or their nieces and nephews, they know what it is.
Now, obviously, when this was all happening to you, things like the internet probably didn't exist. But it I think it's fuel it sorry.
It existed, but nowhere near like it does today.
No, but I also think that's part of the problem in that it's fueling trafficking. Do you agree?
I actually agree and kind of not agree. I don't think the internet is fueling it and making it happen more frequently. I just think that it's making it easier for them. And it's easier to network. Before, everything was mostly word of mouth, and now they can go on to social media and they can network that way. They can do it in secret behind a fake account. So I don't think it's like fueling it. I think it's happening just as much as it was then, but it is easier for them to do things now. And they're evolving with technology. They're having kids that are already under their control, like teenage girls acting a lot younger, targeting other girls on social media. So if a kid, like if you see your kid doing like an Instagram video chat or something like that, and it's a kid's face and a kid's voice, they could be groomed to recruit your child, which is extremely scary. And very difficult to kind of figure out if, you know, your kid's online friend is actually a real, you know, has real good intentions or not. So I think learning, oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say it sounds absolutely terrifying thinking about that.
It is, but it's something you can easily educate yourself on, looking up grooming and things like that, teaching your kids about grooming and, you know, how it's like, for example, like if a kid's being bullied at school and has, you know, parents that are always at work, which is very common, at least here in the US. I don't know
It
how
is
it is over there.
here as well.
So, you know, like teach your kid, like, listen, I know you're going through a lot of things at school. But be careful who you talk to because they're going to use that and say, listen, like, I know you're getting bullied, and it seems like your parents don't really care because they're never around. But my mom's a stay-at-home mom. She doesn't work. You can come live with me and come hang out with me and things like that. But it's like a month-long process. Like, it's not done in an instant. So I know with my children, I mean, my son takes it a bit far. He throws his phone at me. Literally, if he thinks somebody is targeting him. But I have a very open dialogue relationship with my daughters. I mean, they tell me more than I'd like. But if there was an incident where a man had left some comments on my daughter's Facebook page that were seem innocent but were really inappropriate, he just basically said, "Hey, do you have Messenger? So we can talk in private." And I'm like, who is this guy? And she's like, "Mom, chill. He works at my school. I had him fired within 18 hours." Oh,
Oh
that
my
is,
God.
that's grooming behavior, trying to get them into
Yeah.
private. And so it's like now, like with my daughter seeing that he was instantly fired and a lot of things that happened with him, now she comes to me when people say things that are kind of weird. Like I know my youngest is just about six, or younger daughter is just about 16, and she's always like, "Mom, I met this girl and she says she's in England, but she doesn't have an English accent, so I feel kind of weird. Like she doesn't sound like she's in England."
Yeah.
And I'm like, "Well, I looked at the profile. It seems normal." And it turns out that they were military
Oh, okay.
from here in the
Yeah.
US. So it was like just teaching her different things to look for. And then she comes to me with those things because I don't like try to keep, I don't keep my kids off social media. My son has had a phone forever. He's eight. But I think it's more effective to allow them to have it, but teach them the things to look for.
Yeah.
Because I did an episode with my daughter, and she said, she's like, "The more strict you get with your kids, and for obvious reasons and protective reasons, the more kids will get secretive. And they've got friends that know how to make things secret. I guess you can like change the name of apps on iPhones." My daughter told me it can be done, but won't show me how to do it. But it's, but I, and that's why I think, as scary as social media is, it's playing that part in teaching our kids. But I think it also goes further to how adults treat each other. Because I don't know if you're on TikTok, but I mean, there's some freaking bullies out there
Oh,
that are
yeah.
just plain nasty. And it's like, if a kid is being bullied at school, maybe has an abusive parent, and then goes on to TikTok for an escape and sees all these adults bickering back and forth. But then they see this one video of this person that's really kind to them and really understands them, and they were bullied and they helped them. That is the perfect way that a sex trafficker could target a child, by just being kind and paying attention. Because so I think, like, as adults, our behavior on social media is heavily affecting how kids are able to be targeted.
Yeah. So obviously you mentioned your podcast. Why did you create the show? Is it simply just to raise awareness, or is it cathartic for you? Like, why did you start the show?
And I think it's a little bit of both. I started sharing my story first on TikTok, and I got a very large following. But it was kind of hard to fit everything into a 60-second video. And the way TikTok is like, if you don't catch them in like the first couple of seconds, you'll lose them and they'll just swipe. So after doing lives, and for like 5, 6, 7 hours a day, like trying to get the message
Oh,
out, a lot of people told me to start a podcast. So I luckily had a really big podcaster that said he would help like teach me everything to get started. But
Yeah.
it was so I could share my story without time constraints. And I also use it to share tips, talk about different cases that have been going on, and different things like that. But the main focus is to put a human face, human voice to sex trafficking, because I think a lot of people really don't view us as per as people. Or like, I know I feel like that a lot. Like, I'm not viewed as a person. My friend said it perfectly. It's like I'm a zoo animal. Like, they can just ask anything, no boundaries, nothing, because I'm sharing trauma. So it's totally normal to ask if I have any STDs, which like you wouldn't ask a normal person that.
No.
So that's why I do my podcast, and I talk about different things like how to support survivors, what to do if you see, a victim, and just sharing my story so, it can kind of open people's eyes. I did this whole series on TikTok where I showed all the homes that I lived in that I had been trafficked out of, and I think that really resonated with people because they're like, "That house looks like my neighbor's house." Like, I've had so many people trying to guess where my childhood home was. No one's
Oh my
gotten it
God.
yet, but They've gotten the, I mean, it's been all over the United States that people think it is. So it was really good because I think it helped people realize like it's not just happening on some islands in the Caribbean or, with the rich and powerful. Like it's everyday people in everyday neighborhoods. And you can't tell sometimes from the outside what's going on behind closed doors.
It's kind of like you want to be more than a statistic.
Yeah, and honestly, I'm actually not a statistic because I wasn't able to press charges, but yeah,
Yeah,
I
you know what I
just,
mean.
yeah, I want people to see what the truth of it is, because there are a lot of people that their heart is in a really good place and they really want to make a difference, but it's like they're looking in all the wrong places. So when I first started on TikTok, I was sharing in like my story in like a hypothetical type of situation. Like, imagine this. And people were like, oh, that's a stretch. And they weren't really believing it. So that's when I was like, all right, I kind of gotta, bite down and I have to do it myself. And then I started sharing my personal experiences and putting my face to it. It was terrifying.
Oh, I can
But
imagine.
I was like 2.5 years ago. And now it's like I mean, I have one video I think that has like 2 million views on it, so it's like I'm happy the message is getting out, but I still get a lot of naysayers, a lot of people that are like, I don't believe you, which is fine. I don't care. I don't force anyone to believe me. I know what it's like to be forced to think a certain way. But I always say to those people, you don't have to, but believe the message at least, because this is what sex trafficking looks like. So
As you mentioned, on TikTok, actually, one of your videos went viral. What was the effect on you, and how did people react to your story? You've basically just answered my question, but
well, honestly, I hate going viral. I really hate it. It's like a full-time job, babysitting comments, deleting trolls, and but it's I had like a pretty steady following. This was a new account I just started at the end of last year. My original account I don't have anymore, but I was like just cruising around 7,000 followers, and I was like, this is cool. I've got like a real nice following. I'm reaching a few more hundred more people every so often. But that video, oh my God, it went up over like 200,000 views in like an hour. I'm like,
Oh my God.
it's too much. And then it's like I had all these podcasters reaching out, organizations reaching out, like so much. I've just been so busy and so
Blimey.
overwhelmed. But it's I like that the story is getting out and the truth is getting out and people are paying attention to it. But I'm just, as strange as it sounds, I really like being in the background. I don't like being like up front and talking, but it gets hard because it's healing to share, knowing that, seeing comments from other survivors and other people saying, this happened to me, or other people saying, wow, like you're really opening my eyes. Like, I feel like I'm making a difference, but in the same like sense, I'm also being re-traumatized over and over again every time I talk about my story. And it's like I have to shut down my emotions. And people have actually made comments. They're like, you seem so emotionally detached. I'm like, how do you talk about this without emotionally detaching yourself from it? So it's like kind of up and down. That's why I don't like going viral, because it's just a lot at once. And
I
it
can
just,
imagine.
everything just blew up with that one video. And it was strange because my friend was actually in the city that that happened, or that I, from the house I escaped from. And I gave her the address and she drove by it and was like, there's no way. I think like she took a picture. She's like, is this really it? Like, because it was such a normal looking neighborhood with kids running around. And I was like, I wish I could go down there and videotape, but my parents still live there, so I'm terrified. I'm like, oh, I'll just do some screenshots. And that's when everything just like went crazy. I'm like, oh, I regret doing it, but I'm happy that I did it in the same sense.
That's good. I heard one of your podcast episodes, and you mentioned that you're kind of speaking with the government and various other organizations regarding kind of trafficking. What have
Yeah.
you been saying to them, and what they've been saying to you?
Well, I know specifically I'm working with one person that's running for a governor in one of our states here. And I basically, when I started the conversation, I said to her, I don't know where all the like how to fix the laws and how to fix everything. But I can't, what I do know is where the justice system failed me, and where different things have like that would have been different. Could have made things a lot easier for me to escape a lot sooner than I had. So I've just kind of been doing that and giving the like giving the perspective from a not only just a victim's eyes, but also from a trafficker's eyes. I never trafficked anyone, but being around it my entire life, like I know how they think, I know how they process things, I know how they'll use certain laws to exploit certain laws for their benefit. So it's like I'm just trying to get people to look at it from a different perspective. It's like I think a lot of people are focused on like for example, there was a law in one of the states where if because a lot of times how they do it here is they'll do like a prostitution sting and they'll arrest the sex trafficking victim as a prostitute. But give them the opportunity to get like what they're calling victimhood status and have everything wiped. And, you know, it's basically not to get them, it's to get them away from their traffickers so they feel more comfortable talking. The problem is in some states they have to plead guilty before they can get that victimhood status. And that guilty plea, the sex trafficker can use that and be like, well, they admitted to the prostitution, so there goes the coercion and fraud. And then their sentence gets lightened from sex trafficking. So it's like, I agree with how the process is, it works on getting sex traffickers, but maybe don't have them plead guilty before they get the victimhood status because that guilty plea helps the trafficker. And it's like, oh, some people are like, wow, never really thought of it that way. So that's kind of what I've been doing. It's nothing in like an official capacity. I'm just reaching out and whoever answers. So, but I'm hoping someday to get more traction and do it like as a job, like maybe a political lobbyist or open an organization or something, but reaching out to as many people as will answer me. But that's basically what I'm doing is and with the organizations, it's almost the same thing, but it's there's like a pimp prostitute type of sex trafficking, which is obviously more likely than not like a boyfriend or a husband that controls, you know, a bunch of girls. So I'm just trying to give the organization's perspective of what it's like to have a family member do it because a lot of people just don't understand it and they don't really understand, like, you know, when someone's groomed at an older age, it's kind of easier to break that, like, oh, excuse me, like the mind power that they have. But when you're created as a child to be the perfect victim, a lot of people like that just don't make it out because they don't know. I mean, I escaped, I had gotten remarried, had another child. And I still had no idea that it was called sex trafficking. I just thought I was being abused. So that's what I'm trying to do with the organizations is because most of the information they put out is like the pimp prostitute type of situation. So getting them to try to add it in there. I had an amazing support group that I went to, but it was based around domestic violence. So, if they had been a little bit more educated about sex trafficking, I think they would have picked up on, I hope they would have at least picked up on and been like, you know, this is a lot worse than just domestic violence. But the only thing that they picked up on was, I think the advocate's exact words were, that is the most dangerous abuser out of anybody that we work with. That man is scary because she went with me for one of my restraining orders, but they didn't know the extent of what was going on because I didn't think anything of it. I just thought they were allowing their friends to do things to me that were kind of crazy, but it was normal. And then it was abuse, it wasn't sex trafficking. So that's why I think getting the message out is just so important because the more people that know what it is, the more people that will tell someone it's not normal. And that was like the words I needed to hear as a kid, like, is this is not normal. This is not okay. This is not what parents should be doing. Like, even when they did the good touch, bad touch at school, they never explained it. And it was like a stranger danger type of thing. They never explained, you know, your parents shouldn't be touching you there, or if your parents give permission, it's still wrong. Like they said, they talked about like a doctor doing it, but me having it happen by all these men and women all the time, they never specified, okay, like doctors can do it and your parents can give permission for that for medical reasons, but they never said, but they can't give permission for a stranger to do it. So it's just like little things like that. And that's what I'm working with organizations and hoping that when they're sending people out to schools, I'm trying to get more people to be able to talk to schools, that they're making those little tiny differences when they're teaching children. Because like that, like when I got the good touch, bad touch talk, they never said it wasn't okay for your parents to give permission for a stranger. And that little piece of information would have changed everything for me.
Yeah. Well, that's a very interesting perspective. My final question for you is, do you have one piece of advice for everyone who maybe suspects that something's going on, or, you know, something is happening to them? What would be your advice?
For somebody that's like out in public that thinks they see something, always report it, because it's better to be wrong and report it than be right and do nothing.
Yeah.
And anybody that's in the life, it's scary. And the fear is overwhelming. And I totally understand it. But it's like, if you feel like it's wrong, it probably is wrong. And even if everyone around you is telling you it isn't wrong, how you feel is more important than that. Yes. So just go with your gut and know that it isn't normal. And we do survive. And we do lead semi-functional lives. Like I said, I'm still a little crazy, but there is a way out. And, you know, it's just because one person doesn't help doesn't mean the next person isn't. That was one of my mistakes, is I reached out once and didn't get any help and I stopped. So if you aren't getting the help that you feel you need in one place, it doesn't mean you're not going to get it in another place, because I have found a lot of help now as an adult. So
well, that was absolutely fascinating. Thank you very much for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Bye.
All right, bye.
I want to say thank you to Kelly for taking part in the interview with me and educating us all on the topic of sex trafficking. If you wish to listen to her podcast, you can do so by searching the Unbroken Podcast wherever you get your podcasts, or go to the show notes and you will find it there. You can also find her links on Linktree. Again, this will be listed in the show notes for you. If you want to keep up with me and Amy Talks, please follow at Amy Talks Podcast on Twitter and at amytalks.podcast on Instagram. Follow the show on your favourite podcast platform to get new episodes as soon as they are available. Search Amy Talks. If you have any feedback or a question, please do get in touch at amytalkspodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, bye.